I don't think I've really ever been in touch with what normal life is, with what an average everyday life is. I've always felt disconnected from that. Sometimes by circumstance, sometimes by interest, sometimes by sheer luck, sometimes by not being aware of the things I'm not aware of. But throughout my life, I've felt kind of disconnected from that. It's one of the reasons I think that I find it fascinating to look in someone's bathroom. Sounds kind of weird, but when I visit a friend at their place, at their home, inevitably I have to go to the washroom at some point. It almost always happens. It's sometimes a little more embarrassing. I don't really want to use someone's washroom. But it is an interesting experience in getting to know that person. Because you get to see the space where, to a certain degree, it's one of the most intimate spaces in anyone's apartment or house. It's a place where you literally bare yourself. You are your most vulnerable. It's a place where you're looking to recover. It's a place where you're looking for relief. It's a place where you're looking for reflection, where there is the intake, potentially, of water or of cleanliness and the outgoing of waste. And it's a place that's private. More private than any other spot, most likely, unless they happen to have a guest bedroom, bathroom, or something. So, you know, you get to see what their natural daily habits might be like. You happen to notice that there's, floss that's prominently there. It's probably a good sign that they floss every day. They go through a routine. Is everything laid out perfectly, or is it just sort of haphazard? Is it overwhelmingly filled up with things? Is it neat and tidy, or could it use a sandblaster? And, you know, there's only it's a limited slice of a person's life. But every once in a while, I think about my own bathroom and go, wow, there's that part I should really clean up, and that other part that I've just sort of never really noticed. That other part that's there because it's the most convenient way to lay these things out, even though it kind of looks ugly. And then, of course, there's the idea, well, someone's going to share this washroom, so I need to clean up a bit. But no one really tells you that sort of thing. The only example I had of a washroom was my own for a long time when I was a kid. I didn't really visit too many other people. It just wasn't in my way. Occasionally visit the grandparents, that sort of thing, maybe cousins. Of course, you'd go to school, but school is a place that's more or less devoid of any personality. It's supposed to. It's supposed to be an empty space, a neutral space. One could argue it doesn't succeed that in all places. And one could also argue that the bathrooms are one of the most neglected places in most schools. And also the place subjected to the worst atrocities as far as children not behaving themselves, I guess you might say. But it's interesting what that tells you about a place and about a person. And I look into people's kitchens when I'm there. I don't really go to the point where I'm opening up cabinets, but I really wish I had the chance to see how they organize their spices or where they put their forks, to see how they decide where the cereal is going to be, how they load up their fridge, where all their pots and pans are. Do they do things consciously, or does it feel like it's accumulated? I know for myself, it's felt accumulated numerous times, so I will take everything off the shelves and I'll rearrange it all. And then there's always that question of, is this a pattern which is pleasing to the eye, a momentary order that's going to dissolve as practicality takes hold? I don't all have cans of uniform shape and size, so they're inevitably going to get misstacked again. There'll be a sale on this or a decision to try this other brand, which is a different bottle, and things will go to chaos. You know, you can organize bookshelves by book color. It's incredibly beautiful. I love the aesthetic of it. But then I think two problems come to mind. One, my books don't necessarily have a wide variety of color. And two, how am I going to find anything on these shelves? Now, what's interesting there is what I really think about it. I don't go looking through my books all that often. It's rare that I need to find a specific book. You know, I feel that urge to organize. Occasionally, I organize them by author. That seems to be the most reasonable one. And then, of course, you inevitably have a book which has two authors, and you go, well, I'll do it by the first author, then screw you. But if I'm ever looking by the second author, I'm not going to find it. I want to put all this author's books in one place, but damn it, they have this hardcover that's too big to fit there. Or they have just enough books to fill this part of the shelf, but not enough for the next, which means the next author is going to get bumped right off the shelf. There's going to be one book or two books of theirs in the shelf, and the rest get pushed to the next. Or the beautiful minimal spaces that you see. Beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. I love the open space, the open look of there's nothing around until I know I would inevitably need to find something. And I'd want to put something in that space because I'm always looking for it. My remote control is going to sit right there. I'm not going to have a place to put it away. And even if I do, I'm going to be constantly taking it out. So it's not really going to work for me functionally. And furthermore, I don't have that many places to store stuff, to hide stuff away from being seen. And if I hide it from being seen, I'm going to forget I have it. And I'm going to do what I've done a couple of times, which is buy the same book more than once, or not realize and kind of moan and complain about not having a particular thing and then realize, no, I actually have that. I complained about it another time and bought one. And probably forgot about it because it was misorganized. Things going into the right place. So with this feeling of never quite knowing how the world works, it means that every once in a while I'm faced with this challenge. I need to know how the world works. I need to know it for specific reasons, or I've needed to know it for a while, but I kind of had put it off for a while, or there just wasn't time to dedicate to it. There's never enough time to dedicate to all the things. And when you start to cut away time and you start to say, well, wait, how did I carve out that time? Why am I not happy? Why am I not enjoying any of the things I enjoy? Because they all take time and I need to do something else. But I noticed a pattern. I'm not that old for this pattern to have been that consistent or to have enough examples to really even draw a line. And I don't know when the first instance of this pattern has happened. I've mentioned this before. But roughly about once a decade, there is some sort of moment of crisis. There's some sort of tipping point when what has come before has ended and something new will begin. And most of the time, in fact, almost all the time, it's not been something I initiated to have happen. A set of circumstances collided. Some other thing that I could not have possibly foreseen has happened. And the world opens up in a certain way. Possibilities emerge that I hadn't even considered before. And the instinct is to ignore them. The instinct is to say, wait, no, I was happy with the way things were. Okay, maybe there were things I was unhappy with, and some things I was unaware of. Maybe it wasn't really working as well as I thought it was going to, but I didn't know how to change. I didn't know where that change could be applied. I didn't even know what I would change to. So from where I was, I couldn't see any other possibility. I could only see that the one I was in wasn't fitting quite so well. But it was enough. A comfortable rut, I described it before. But then something enters in. One could use analogies like meteors, but that's just a destructive power, which isn't entirely accurate. These haven't been moments where everything has gone terribly. Just moments where some unexpected change interrupts what I was doing. And I didn't like that. But almost every time it's happened, it's been a good thing. And while it took a while to adjust to the new reality, I was able to. I think each time it's been harder, though. And I'm not sure if I would ascribe that to just the sheer accumulation of experiences or the sedentation of a life lived, whether it's because I'm just older and less flexible and in metaphorical as well as physical ways, whether it's just an accumulation of a lifetime of debt experiences and sometimes physical debt, which burden any future plans. I'm not sure what it is, but there is some hardship engaged with it. But again, while I resist it, it's usually better if I try to jump in. It's usually better if I look for this as an opportunity and try to change in the ways that I feel might be necessary. Do some of the hard things, face some of the hard moments, try to do what I need to do. Most often, they are learning experiences. When my company that I worked for as a software developer was going under, being sort of piecemealed and everybody was being laid off and I was the last employee, I looked at that and said, well, what do I do next? Where am I going from here? What do I need to do? And I decided I needed to go back to academia. I liked school, but I also liked the idea of turning it into something active. Not just passively receiving things, but actively doing research. So I did. I leapt as the image that I always like Captain Jack from his sinking ship coming into harbor. I just gently and easily leapt off the last remains of that ship, off the crow's nest that was now at dock level, and leapt gracefully, well, maybe not gracefully, leapt lightly onto the dock, and proceeded along as if a ship had not sunk behind me, as if this is where I was meant to be now. Now I had to see what happened next. It was a good idea, and for many years I did enjoy that. Another opportunity came along, another sinking ship in a way. Research eventually bored me. It wasn't what I wanted to do, not that way. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do in a way. And I had an intriguing summer, and then I decided to get a whole new job. A dedication to a field which I was never trained for, not formally, not really, but which I had passion for, and still do, and decided to make that change. I'm facing the next one. It's not going to be as radical a change as some of those have been, I don't think. But I'm looking for where my next dock is. It's not, like I said, necessarily going to be somewhere else, but it is going to mean change, significant change, for me. And how I meet that change, how I respond to it, how I find my way through it. It's not something I want to rush into. It's something, though, that I am being rushed into a bit. It's not something I anticipated or planned for. But then again, the plans I had were only half-formed and somewhat unmotivated. I need to learn more. I need to do more. I need to find that center again, which puts me in the middle of what I want to do next, but still relative to where I am already. I think that's one of the reasons I've always loved Isaac Asimov's Foundation. I'm sure that I've read most of the books in the past. I recently reread Foundation. I'm currently rereading Foundation and Empire very slowly. I have the other two of the main series and going to proceed in, hopefully, through his robot books and finally do it right. But in the core book of Foundation, and the core foundation of Foundation, the core idea, is you have someone who looks at the future. Now, it's all a little bit wizardry. It's all a little bit hand-wavium. But basically, he looks at the future and he says, there are going to be patterns I can predict. Individuals are impossible to predict, really. But large populations, they have a certain static to them, They have a certain immobility or a certain inevitability in the way that they move. There are going to be moments where it's going to be less possible to predict what happens. But I'm going to plan for those and see if I can introduce things at the right time in the right place. That's Harry Seldon, I hesitate to say the hero of the story, but the backbone. There is, incidentally, a new Foundation series based on the books. I think it's on Apple right now. It just released, and I'm curious about it. It's a very cerebral sort of story. Even the action moments, even when we're dealing with space pirates, it's space pirates in a cerebral way. But it's that notion of planning the future and seeing those moments. In the story, Harry Seldon goes on to create the Foundation and create a recurring hologram of himself. The idea that he would intervene, potentially, at certain points throughout future history, hoping to influence the difference considerably into the direction that he wanted. Most of the time, he doesn't appear. There is no Harry Seldon crisis, explicitly, but the characters in the novel, who have been given some knowledge about the idea of these crises and how they might be met, are consciously aware that they might be in one of these moments. And they're consciously aware that the way that Harry Seldon had designed his system was that they would have no choice but to do the right thing. The thing that would be right for the furthering of the goal, which is to lessen the 10,000 years of barbarism in this empire down to a few hundred years, or maybe 1,000 years, something like that. And that was very interesting, because there's a certain trust there that's almost, it almost borders on the religious. It's almost faith rather than trust. And so I like that story because I feel like there's a certain element of that in my own life. I meet these crises every so often. Now, I don't know who my Harry Seldon is, who would have been arming me for this potential future conflict, or who might have been anticipating guiding me throughout my good life. If I were religious, it would be easy to see where that would be drawn in. I'm not religious. I don't believe in religion. I don't believe in the mysticism behind it. I find it interesting, and at one point I was a member of a church, but those were obligations created at youth that I never really thought much deeply about until the day I did and realized I didn't care for it at all, that it meant nothing to me. But to a certain degree, I kind of think of my life as proceeding along that pathway. I realize that in Harry Seldon's universe, he was finding it impossible to, or declared it impossible to, understand and predict an individual single person's life. But from my perspective, that single person's life is somewhat more predictable. And so I want to meet this new Harry Seldon crisis in my own life. And think about it that way. Think about it as an opportunity, a crisis, a chance to influence a future portion of my life, the next decade, presumably, and how that decade will play out. Because it hasn't really steered me wrong so far. Mostly, I've got to learn a lot of things so I can be the person I think I need to be to meet this crisis. But I've got some time, at least. If I can just stay focused. I've been wandering out loud. I'm Mark the Encaffeinated One. The details aren't important to you anyway about what this crisis happens to be, but let's just say there are a number of ways that number of things, number of areas where I've never really had a lot of experience or awareness. And I seem to need that now. And I think I can convince myself to learn them, even though they are not part of my core interest. The obligation, hopefully, will be motivation enough. And to a certain degree, there's always excitement for me to learn something, and the practicality of knowledge I can actually do something with, that is always something I've felt like I could appreciate. So we'll see. It's strange to not know how normal lives work. Does everyone's life work like this? In me, it feels almost like clockwork. That is the weirdest and exciting and bewildering thing of all. I shall continue, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.